Now is the time to defuse and de-escalate. Now is the time for maximum restraint.
That was Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, in an emergency meeting. Of course, following this first time in history, Iran launching a direct military assault on Israel, including more than 300 drones and missiles. And by now we know that Israel and the allies blocked 99% of those. The question is, what will Israel do now? Let's ask Rocky Reshkowski, retired Lieutenant Colonel for the United States Army, joining us this morning. Good morning, Rocky.
Good morning, Jamie.
I found it scary when the news came out and seeing the video. Just now what? And no one wants a larger war, but how do you let that go unanswered?
You're absolutely correct. You know, the world is anxiously watching what will happen next. And we now learned that the Israeli war cabinet has met for hours yesterday to determine what their decision should be. And I'm glad you led off with that Guterres clip, because that's the same commentary that our president, Joseph Biden, has pushed on Iran also. But the dilemma that Israel has been dealing with is establishing deterrence. No one has established deterrence in that region, and only it's been left on Israel to set up the table for deterrence. So now they are left with three decisions. Do they attack Iran directly? Do they attack these Iranian satellites of Hezbollah in the southern Lebanon, further Hamas activity in Gaza, which seems to be destroyed already, and then the Houthis in Yemen, which the United States and Saudi Arabia are dealing with. And what's interesting is that the news has just broken that Israel has announced, basically, that they have created both and decided on offensive and defensive plans. So to me, that means that we will now see some type of response from Israel towards Iran. And I believe if I was a betting man, the best reaction that Israel could do for the world is to destroy Iran's offensive sites and Iran's nuclear capabilities. Because that's the thing that is not creating that stability or deterrence in the Middle East.
Rocky, because the U.S. Also helped in, you know, knocking down these drones and taking them down, do we have to worry about Iran, you know, trying to start something with us or send some type of, action against the United States?
Great question. And Lloyd, that's what Iran basically said, is that if the United States assists, and the United States is capitulating and assisting and therefore becoming a target as well. But let's look at the countries that were involved in striking down this through over 350 different, you're looking at drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles, and how it was done. Saudi Arabia was involved. Jordan was involved. The United States, the United Kingdom, France, and especially Israel through their protective systems. And so that everybody understands, Israel has five protective systems. They have the Arrow, which deals with the ballistic missiles, basically outside of the Earth's atmospheres that come in from a high trajectory. It has to aim very high and basically takes them out in space. They have David Sling, which is also a weapon system that eliminates missiles coming at them. The Patriot missiles, which are United States created missile systems, defensive systems. They have the Iron Dome and the Iron Beam. So basically, to answer your question, yes, the United States have put themselves in a target to Iran. But again, I will agree with most of the talking heads over the weekend and even still into the future that Iran doesn't want a direct war with the United States. They would lose.
You know, one military official was quoted in a number of papers saying that this was well-telegraphed, that they had an advance notice, and that the attack was largely performative and focused on one particular Israeli base, which made it easy to defend. Even if that's true, does that in any way change the calculus and the importance of sending a retaliatory message against Iran?
great question, Guy. And Guy, this is one area where I'm going to completely disagree with all the talking heads and some of the generals. I was watching CNN to see what they had to respond to this, and I completely disagree with what they said. You do not send over 700 weapons as some type of message. Let's look at it this way. When the United States took out General Soleimani, and the Iranian response was that they would launch 16 missiles at U.S. assets and one base. This attack actually, a lot of people may not realize this, but this attack actually included over 700 drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles. And 700 drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles is a lot of money and a lot of effort. And it's not just focused on one base. Over half of their missiles, drones, and cruise missiles misfired. So over 350 went towards Israel. And for them to be intercepted in different areas, not just one base. You saw them over Jerusalem, over Tel Aviv, over some of their military bases mm-hmm. that obviously have been targeted. So I don't agree that this is some type of small message saying, oh, now it's over. You know, we'll forget about this now. No, I think that Iran did that because it's going to be very difficult for them to replicate this type of attack. And the only satellite that they could truly use that could cause problems for Iran is Hezbollah, that has been stockpiling over 186,000 missiles in southern Lebanon. And that's one of the reasons why Israel took out the individuals that they took out in Syria, as well as in the consulate area, and that has created this response.
I read an opinion piece, Rocky, that was like, don't counterattack right away. Use the allies that were involved in this and try and go the sanction route. Because if you initially attack now, then it becomes this larger war. What would you say to that?
Yeah, that would really work out if we would have gone back to the, and I hate to say this, but the Trump administration position on Iran. The dilemma is there are no sanctions. And Iran is still selling oil to the world. They're selling oil to China, to Russia. They have this what was called the axis of evil. And I just don't see, and we started the discussion with the deterrence in the region. You know, we keep talking about capitulating to Iran, but there is no deterrence. And the only deterrence is Israel. We have now just released another pocket of money to Iran. We have released multiple amounts of money in the past. We have allowed them to participate in the active global sale of oil, which has made them richer. And the money that's coming into Iran, when the previous administration was there, Iran was broke. And that is a true statement. And their oil was sanctioned, and their weapons, there was deterrence in the region. Now there is none. So I kind of disagree that I listen, no one that has ever gone to war wants war repeated. I'm not a warmonger. We have 16 wars that are going on right now in the world that most people don't even realize. And this is the last place we'd want it to explode in that region. But without deterrence, you have war.
Yeah, thank you, Rocky Reshkowski, retired Lieutenant Colonel for the U.S. Army, for your opinions and your expertise, as this is a very scary time in the world, and we'll wait and see what happens in that region. Thank you for your time.
It truly is. Thank you for having me, and God bless America.
Coming up next, it is tax day in this country. We're going to talk about the deadline and extensions and all that has to do with that next at 6:49.
Time now for Eye on Engineering, brought to you by Tejan Automotive Technologies, the formula for better mobility.
Uncertainty of AI, the job market, and inflation is something most people with a job face these days, and engineers are certainly part of that. Other stressors they face include the uncertainty of the EV market, whether skills are transferable to future roles, and more. Gina Covarrubias is a life coach and former aerospace engineer who specializes in helping engineers fight what she calls career despair. She's scheduled to speak to the SAE World Congress this week in Detroit. Perhaps counterintuitively, she says that the best thing engineers can do is focus on themselves, adopting a continual learning mindset that builds a foundation that can withstand any industry storm. She said frustration often leads to cutting corners, which can damage confidence internally and integrity externally. Doing your best every day, she says, is the key to staying sharp and, in turn, relevant. For SAE International, I'm Chris Klotz, and that's an Eye on Engineering.